What a privilege it is for me to be here, for us to be here this morning. We feel a real kinship here with this church for what you have stood, what you stand for, what you have stood for all through the years in terms of good doctrine and good Christian fellowship here. And we thank God for a pastor and a wife and family like you have here that stayed by the stuff for so many, many years. I call your attention here at the beginning to some new books that we have. We have some new ones on the educational table. This is a reprint of The Names of God from Nathan Stone. He was my professor at Moody Bible Institute way back when. And a book here, if you have a Jewish doctor, Jewish Doctors Meet the Great Physician. It's a book that has the testimony of many and pictures of many of the Jewish doctors. You have Jewish friends you want to reach for Christ. How to introduce your Jewish friends to the Messiah. And if you turn the book upside down, it's how to introduce our Muslim friends to the Messiah. All right. All right. These will be of interest to you back there. Well, where in the world are we going in the Mideast? Everyone is asking that, and lately here, the Mideast has made the front pages of the news media and the newspaper. When the Apostle Paul wrote his 13 letters, the most prominent doctrinal treatise or letter, of course, was the book of Romans. You'll agree with that, won't you? The very heart of the book of Romans, Paul talks about Israel. Romans 9, Romans 10, and Romans 11. It's very significant. In Romans 9, he speaks of Israel's past election. In Romans 10, Israel's present rejection. And in Romans 11, Israel's future restoration. I'd like us to look for a few moments here this morning at this section in Romans chapter 11. In Romans 11:25, "For I would not, brethren, that you should be ignorant of this mystery." It's interesting. Three times Paul says that statement in his letters. "I would not that you be ignorant of this mystery." Now, first of all, he says it in 1 Corinthians 10:1. Doesn't want the brethren to be ignorant. Now, please interpret this right. He's not talking about the ignorant brethren. He's not saying that. He doesn't want the brethren, get your English right here, doesn't want the brethren to be ignorant about certain truths here. In Romans, or rather 1 Corinthians 10:1, he doesn't want them to be ignorant about Old Testament events, especially in the book of Numbers, the whole story of the children of Israel who murmured all the week long. We used to sing the murmuring song in Sunday school. They murmured on Monday and murmured on Tuesday, you know. And he doesn't want them to be ignorant, doesn't want us to be ignorant about the Old Testament history. In 1 Thessalonians 4:13, Paul doesn't want the brethren to be ignorant about those who are asleep in the Lord and those of us who remain and are alive or in the Lord. Now, I'm not suggesting that you go to sleep this morning. This is not what I'm talking about. I heard in one church about the board that had instructed the ushers in the church that if anyone ever went to sleep during the morning message, the ushers were to march down right to the pulpit and wake up the preacher. So So that's how, you know, I'm not going to make you sleep here this morning. It's my responsibility. I want to talk about Romans 11 and the future restoration of the nation of Israel. The key to interpreting the book that is Romans 9, 10, 11 is that Israel is viewed nationally. That is the key to interpretation. The apostle is talking about the nation of Israel, past, present, future. Her election, her rejection, her restoration here in Romans chapter 11. Now, there are two factors involved in reference to the restoration of Israel. And before we mention these two factors here on Israel's restoration, we need to point out that today there are many Christians and many denominations, especially the Reformed section of the church. These people do not believe that there is any future nation of Israel. A very interesting belief that actually got its origin in the Roman Catholic Church. The church fathers, like Augustine, were terribly anti-Semitic. And so it got instilled in the Roman Catholic Church that God was through with the Jews, and he wrote them off. The Jews were the God-haters, the Jews were the Christ-killers. God's absolutely through with them, and he transferred all of the blessings of Israel and the promises directly to the church. That's the philosophy in many of these denominations, and especially in the Reformed church or churches. I mean, you'll find some Reformed theologians are very good in many areas, you know. They're good on their Christology, they're good on their theology, but when it comes to eschatology, or the doctrine of the future, including Israel, they have, listen to this now, they have adopted the theology of the Roman Catholic Church. All of the major reformers, Luther, Calvin, Zwingli, Knox, and even some of the Anabaptists, all of these reformers did not study any eschatology. It wasn't in focus in those days. In the Reformation, the major focus was justification by faith, the position of the Bible over the church and over church councils. That was in focus, the priesthood of every believer, and of course Luther wanted to get married, and so that was in focus too. All of these matters, eschatology, the doctrine of the future, was not in view until hundreds of years later, when men began to re-examine the Bible and re-study. Consequently, the theology of the Roman Catholic Church still is today, with reference to Israel, is that God is through with Israel, there's no future for this nation, and there's no kingdom promises, no fulfilled. They either believe that the kingdom, which we know as the millennium, the 1,000-year rule of Christ, is either taking place now, down here on earth, in the church, it's being fulfilled, or it's being fulfilled in heaven. Those are the two popular views, the Reformed position on eschatology with reference to Israel. That's not the teaching of Romans chapter 11 at all. And that's why we want to expound this very simple chapter here. You see, there's two reasons. This chapter gives two reasons why that there is a future for Israel. And you want, maybe you want to write down these two reasons, and we'll talk a little bit about it here at this time. A future restoration is assured Because Israel's present rejection is not total. Israel's present rejection is not total. I'll give you a second reason. A future restoration for Israel is assured. Because Israel's present rejection is not final. Those are the two reasons why there's a future for this nation. Their rejection is not total. Their rejection is not final. Well, let's take a look. In Romans 11, verses 1 through 10, Paul is dividing Israel into two groups. There's a minority group, verses 1 through 6, and there's a majority group, as we think of the entire nation. The minority group, the majority of that nation. Look at the minority group, verses 1 through 6. Verse 1, I say then, has God cast away his people? 1,000 times, no, God forbid, it says. And Paul goes on to show how his own conversion demonstrates he's I also am an Israelite of the seed of Abram. He demonstrates by his own conversion that God has not rejected all the Jews or all the Israelites. And what a conversion that was. Where Paul, in three places in the New Testament, is giving his testimony. In the book of Acts and some in Corinthians there. So, Paul himself is a testimony belonging to that minority group. And then we have another example in Romans 11, verses 2 through 6. Elijah in the Old Testament is part of that minority group. You remember this very powerful prophet, along with seven other 1,000 Israelites, did not what? Bow the knee to the Baal, to the Baalim, to the Ashtoreth, to the female fertility goddesses and the gods imported from Assyria and from Babylon and even from Egypt. Did not bow the knee. And Elijah thought now that he was the only one left. You remember that? What was it? Jezebel chased him out of town and he sat under the juniper tree and sang the song, "Don't sit under the juniper tree with anyone else but me." and there's a number of the prophets that have sat under the juniper tree. It's okay, you know. I think it's all right for pastors to go out and sit under for a day. he said, I, Lord, am left. Thought he was the only one. Can you imagine? We call it an Elijah complex. Now, I met a fellow like that one time, many years ago in the city of Chicago. I got on a bus, and he was the pastor of a church, and he was a pastor of a Baptist church. I don't know what group, but I said, "Where's your church located?" Well, he says it's located on 102156 South 183rd Street, somewhere on the south side of Chicago. And then he told me, he says, "You better come over," he says, "to our church." I said, "Why is that?" He says, "It's the only place," he says, that to be saved. He says, we're the only one in this town," he says, "preaching the truth." And you know, he believed it. And when people say things like that, you know, lady, the other day, she says, "I saw a vision, I saw Jesus in the sky." You know, I told her, I said, "Madam," I said, "I sincerely believe that you saw that." So, he really had an Elijah complex.
And sometimes you find churches and some isolated group that, well, we're the only fundamental work in town, and we're the only ones around. And that's what Elijah actually thought. I am left. And God said, no. You've got some other people around. And we may not know where they're at. And some of them ought not to be doing what they're doing. I don't know. But God's got some people around. 7,000. 1,000 here, 100 there, 1 here, 1 there. And when we get to heaven, we're going to meet all of God's people in very strange places that God, by His sovereign grace, has distributed. And here are these Israelites here. They're around. And some of them are secret believers. But God has a way of maneuvering the circumstances and making life a little rough for some of these secret believers so that they're going to have to share their testimony and publicly testify, as the Bible indicates, to confess Jesus. Well, the minority group demonstrates that there is a future for these people. Well, what about the majority group? Where do they stand today, nationally, as we look at Israel? Well, 3 Old Testament men predicted that God would harden the heart of unbelieving Israel. We have to define what this hardening of the heart is, but this is rich in quotation. You really need to look at the marginal references and check out the Old Testament quotations. You must understand that to unfold the text of the Bible. And there's even a whole hermeneutics in why the New Testament uses the Old Testament and how the New Testament uses the Old Testament quotations. Sometimes it's a direct fulfillment, and it will say, thus it is fulfilled by the prophet. And sometimes it's quoted to illustrate. And sometimes it's quoted to build new truth upon existing Old Testament truth. Jesus said, you have heard in old times, it is said, now I say unto you. He built upon that foundation. So various reasons. Moses is quoted in Deuteronomy 29. David is quoted, and Isaiah is quoted in Isaiah 69:10. I'd like to let's take a look at the Isaiah quotation here, please. Isaiah is quoted in Isaiah 29:10. For the Lord has poured out upon you the spirit of deep sleep, and has closed your eyes, the prophets and your rulers, the seers, hath he covered up. Now, it's like God hardening the heart of Pharaoh. 7 times in the Bible it says Pharaoh hardened his own heart, right? And 7 times it says God hardened his heart. Now, this is how God hardens a person's heart. God permits a person to harden their own heart. It's a terrible state of affairs when a man hardens his heart, right? Before the Lord. But you see, God's given us a little bit of free will. And that's part of being created in His image. And if a person hardens his heart to the truth, there's nothing else but error. And the Bible teaches that. And God permits that. So Pharaoh hardened his own heart. And that's how God hardens a person's heart. And this minority group the majority group is that the majority, the nation, has hardened their own hearts at this particular time. And God told this to Isaiah when he called him in the ministry. He said, Isaiah, they're not going to listen to your message. How long? Long time, Isaiah. And Jesus quoted it in Mark 4, 11 and 12, when he said, he sent the disciples out in the parable of the sower. He said, don't you know this parable? And how will you know all parables? And he quoted from Isaiah chapter 6 when God told Isaiah, they're not going to listen to your message. Remember Isaiah 53:1? Lord, who has believed our report? The prophet is crying out. So there's a majority group today that do not believe. They have hardened their hearts to the Lord, and blindness in part has happened to this nation of Israel. Now, the apostle talks about these two groups, and then he talks about the fullness of the Gentiles. A very interesting phrase here in 11 and verse 12, if you will look at it. This, the fall of them, if the fall of them be the riches of the world, diminishing of them the riches of the Gentiles, how much more their what? Their fullness. Note their fall as a nation, and note their future fullness here. Now, what is this time period, the fullness of the Gentiles? It's different from the times of the Gentiles. Vastly different. The times of the Gentiles began with Nebuchadnezzar. Remember the image in Daniel chapter 2? And the times of the Gentiles will conclude with the Antichrist at Armageddon. Those are the times of the Gentiles. But the fullness of the Gentiles is a time span involved in the building and completion of the church and the building up of the body of Christ in our day. The church, consisting both of Jews and Gentiles, had its birthday at Pentecost and will have its consummation at the rapture when Jesus returns. That's the church. The church did not begin with Abraham, as the Reformed theologians believe. So, the fullness of the Gentiles is the period here. What is the purpose of this period as far as Israel is concerned? Romans 11 and 11. Have they stumbled that they should fall? God forbid. But rather through their fall, that is as a nation, salvation has come to you, to the Gentiles. To do what? To provoke them to jealousy. The problem is, most have just been provoking them. Period. Provoking them. No. The gospel has come out to you as Gentiles. To the world. To the Gentile world. In this whole period of time, during the fullness of the Gentiles, while the church is being built, and God is adding daily to that church the body of Christ, so that you might provoke them to jealousy. Our Jewish friends get very, very jealous. When they see a believer filled with the Spirit of God and having the peace of Christ. Because they don't have that peace. They're troubled people. They're a restless people in fulfillment of Deuteronomy chapter 28. Scattered among the Goyim, among the Gentiles, they're extremely restful and they don't have any peace. No matter how composed they may seem, they don't have the peace. And Jesus said, peace I leave with you. Peace I give to you. Not as the world gives, right? And they're seeking the type of peace that this world gives. And it can't give it to them. So, this is why. The gospel has gone out to the Gentiles. That Gentiles might be saved and turn right around and win Jewish people to Christ. To provoke them. My brother was won to Christ by a converted Roman Catholic. And we in turn witness to a lot of Roman Catholics. And Catholics get saved. Now you win Jewish people to Christ and provoke them to jealousy. And then Paul gives a parable. Marvelous parable of the olive tree to illustrate all of this. Just very, very briefly. The roots of the tree are made up of Abraham. and other godly Old Testament men, the patriarchs, verse 16, the roots of the olive tree. Some of the original branches broken off. It refers to unbelieving Jews. Verse 17. Now some branches from the wild olive tree have been grafted in. This is contrary to what's normally done. This is contrary to nature to have this done. But this is God's plan. The branches from the wild olive tree have been grafted in, referring to believing Gentiles. You have been grafted into the root of this tree. And the once removed original branches will someday be grafted in. Now this refers to the future repentant people of Israel. As a nation, it's speaking nationally. So this marvelous illustration of the olive tree. Now, the second reason here, why God's not through and why there'll be a future, is assured because of Israel's present rejection is not final. Two verses. 11:11 or 11:12 here. If the fall of them be the riches of the world, then the verse says how much more their fullness. Their fall, their fullness. And Romans 11:25, I don't want you to be ignorant, brethren, of this mystery. It says, blindness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. That is, until the church age is complete. And the prophet foretold this. Don't have time, but if you want to look up Isaiah 59, verses 20 and 21, the prophets have predicted the future restoration of this nation. Especially Isaiah predicted in Isaiah 59:21 that God would keep his covenant with Israel. This chapter places stress on the faithfulness of God, teaching us that God's gifts and God's calling are irrevocable. Romans 11:28-32. As concerning the gospel, they are enemies for your sake. But as touching the election, they are beloved for the Father's sake. For the gifts and calling of God are without revocation. They're without any revocation. God has a plan, and he's working that plan, and that plan will be consummated. You in times past have not believed, yet have now obtained mercy for their unbelief. Even so now, these also now have not believed that through your mercy they might obtain mercy. You're to provoke them to jealousy because God has had mercy upon you. You are to have mercy upon them. For God hath concluded them all in unbelief that he might have mercy upon all. Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. Who hath known the mind of the Lord? Who hath been his counselor? Or who hath first given to him? It shall be recompensed unto him again. For of him, and through him, and to him are all things, to whom be glory forever and Israel, forever and ever here. So it has been foretold by the prophet, and through the faithfulness of God, that this nation will be restored. When will they be restored? It says in verse 26, and so all Israel, may we insert all that's left, at that time, after discipline, the remnant, all that's left of that nation, the whole remainder of that nation, will be saved. When? Verse 26, when the deliverer comes. When the redeemer returns. You got the time framework. The second coming of Christ. At the second coming, a nation will be born in a day. Upon what basis will this happen? For this is my covenant, which I make unto them. And God promised that covenant to Jeremiah, announced it to Isaiah, Ezekiel spoke about the new covenant in the old covenant relating to the nation of Israel. Contrary to Roman Catholic theology, contrary to the Reformed position, and contrary to many strange views of eschatology that is current in our day, this chapter teaches that there is a future restoration assured to Israel as a people. Because, first of all, their rejection is not total, and secondly, their rejection is not final. And in the meanwhile, you and I must provoke them to jealousy and have mercy upon them by presenting the gospel. Now, you've all received a little folder here. Israel needs your prayers. The Jewish people need the gospel. And that's what we're all about. I don't want to tell you the greatest kept secret in our mission, and that is that we win as many Gentiles to Christ as we do Jews. Our missionaries witness to everyone, everything that walks. Yeah, we do win Jewish people, but as many Gentiles as Jewish people. So now we're asking you to pray for the peace of Jerusalem and help us get the gospel out to Jewish people. This is so what you give can be tax deductible, and you can get a tax deductible receipt. And if you're making a check out, you can make it out Chosen People Ministries and use this, and you can get some free items here also. It is a delight for me to be here this morning. God bless you, folks. We pray for your pastor and for this place.
Dr. Goldberg always gives us a banquet every time he comes. We've had a banquet this morning, and we so much appreciate this ministry that we've received today. What a blessing. And so now it's legitimate for you to provoke your Jewish friends if you're provoking them in the right way. We're going to sing one stanza of hymn 5.